Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
It is not Sean Pendergast. It's John Harris sitting in for our good buddy Sean Pendergast. Seth Payne is with me. And during the break, we were kind of chatting about a number of different things, including, and I know a lot of people don't get to experience this, but selfishly, the food spread at NRG Stadium for the media has gone through the roof good this year. It's gotten better and better and better, but I oftentimes, like, I find myself holding back so I don't have to run to the bathroom in the second quarter of the game.
You are, all right, yeah.
So, it's unbelievable. So, the other day for Christmas, the Christmas Day game, there was, like, prime rib. There were, like, voodoo donuts.
Chicken and waffles.
I'm like, oh, my God.
Fresh-baked cookies. They had a little cookie oven. It was like a adult-sized easy-bake oven. There was a woman sitting there cooking.
Yes. Cooking, the owner Spunkmeyer's. They're the best.
Which obviously absolute it's like best. A toaster oven or something. But it was. But it reminded me, because they're tiny little cookies, of an easy-bake oven.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing they don't make anymore. So you can't be trusted to just bake food with a light bulb like you used to?
Yeah, I guess you can't cook food with a light bulb like you used to.
I'm guessing somebody got sued. I have a guess. Maybe you can still buy an easy bake oven. But it was, I'd asked you, because we're on the topic of Christmas food, how many days old can I... I've got a coconut cream pie, and I was wondering how many days the shelf life was on that. And you told me basically a week, so I'm good to go over there.
You're good.
It is, B, is it still considered a healthy breakfast choice?
I'm going with at the holidays, yes.
Okay, good.
That's, I'm going at the holidays, yes.
Whoever the marketing genius was that one day convinced America that that pastries were a good breakfast food, God bless them. They're like... Because you can't skip breakfast. Well, so I got to have a Pop-Tart. That's the healthiest thing I can do.
Okay, so you can weigh in on this, Seth, because my wife and I had this conversation one time. I was hungry at night. I wanted something sweet. And I went and I got a bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
And my wife is like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I got a bowl of cereal. She's like, why? And I was like, it's my dessert.
Yeah.
And she lost her mind, like, no, cereal's not dessert. I was like, why not? Why can't cereal be dessert?
Oh, dude, you know what the best thing? This is one thing. Kids, you got this to look forward to. There's still times. I'm 49 years old. I've been a full-grown man for at least, like, 12 years now.
Yeah.
And there's still times where I'm kind of like, these moments where I'm like, holy crap, I can just do this. And a lot of times it's in the grocery store. And it's like, oh, yeah, I can really buy and eat whatever I want.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's been that way since I was 18, but there's just something about it that you're like, oh, yeah, being an adult's pretty cool.
It is cool.
If I want to eat a sleeve of cookies, then nobody's stopping me. Even my cardiologist can't really stop me. He can advise against it,
That's right.
I can flip him the bird and do it.
So cereal for dessert, I finally got to understand what's the difference in having... Like, if I'm having a bowl of Rice Krispies, what's the difference in having a bowl of Rice Krispies versus having a Rice Krispie treat?
Yeah.
Not much.
It's nothing.
Not much.
The cultural things that we learn and think of as norms or anything, it's, at the end of the day, it's dumb and we're all malleable and you can adjust to anything. I was watching a video yesterday of these British school children, like teenage kids, eating biscuits and gravy.
Oh, for the first time?
I've
seen those videos.
A biscuit is like a cookie type thing in England. So at first they had to get over, like, wait, this is a biscuit?
Right.
So they had the biscuit first. And then you pour the sausage gravy on it. And it looks, truth be told, if you think about it, if you've never seen sausage gravy before, as one of the kids said, it looks like vomit, you know?
You're wondering about your life choices at that point. You're like, what did you just put on my so-called biscuit?
But then you see their faces when they first eat the biscuits and gravy. And it's like a whole new world that opened up to them.
It is magical. It's magical.
It's And there's nothing about biscuits and gravy that you would think, like, oh, that's obviously a breakfast food, which is why I think that it's no. I've had biscuits and gravy, like, every meal of the day and everywhere in between for a long time. It's an anytime.
That's right. I've now, over the last probably couple months, I've learned to make my own biscuits, and I make my own gravy. But I haven't made them both at the same time. So that now that I'm maybe inspired to make
you're
biscuits.
Like a heavy set Alabama lady or something.
That's exactly right.
Are you making homemade sausage sausage gravy?
I haven't homemade the sausage, but I will make my own gravy.
Right.
And I'll
right.
just yeah, use I mean, like Jimmy Dean sausage. Gravy, yeah. Like I do have to draw the line somewhere. So I just use like the Jimmy Dean or the HEB sausage and make it. And then I've learned how to make biscuits. My family seems to love them, and so I continue to make them. So,
this is actually a good segue into what you wanted to talk about, which is making position changes. Because biscuits and sausage gravy factored heavily into me making a position change at one point in my career.
I could totally see that. I could totally see that. I could see that, understand that, I should say. Not see it, because you're very svelte now. When I saw you the other day at the game, I was like, holy cow. Looking at you now, it's like, there's a little bit of body envy from over here. Now, I am a few years older than you. I'm like 3 years older than you. But I feel like you're hanging in there, but more biscuits and gravy. And away you go.
John, all right. I was thinking about how to phrase this in a tweet form the other day. I was walking through the grocery store, and I was like, I was in looking for my Greek yogurt. And there was next to this dude who was wearing like, you know, he was wearing his running gear and everything.
Yeah,
and you could tell. This guy was probably a cross-country runner back in the day. Rail thin, but fit, you know, kind of muscle tone and everything. And I'm like, this guy has no clue how jealous I am of that physique. like benching 500 pounds was cool and all.
Yeah.
But when I see a guy now, like, especially it was at Central Market, so I'm like, that dude's probably got, like, 110 over 70 blood pressure. He can run for miles without breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
He can probably code.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm like, man, that guy's got it going on.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out a way to give him that compliment without him thinking I might be coming on to him.
Yeah.
And I decided there wasn't really a good way to do it. So just all you skinny guys out there, just know there. Like, maybe you're a high schooler. There'll come a day. It's going to serve you well over time. People will be jealous of your physique. Don't worry about your bench press.
Yeah, when I was in high school, people used to tell me, you're so skinny. You're so skinny. I mean, I was 180 pounds, but you're so skinny. And now they see me and they're like, man, you've really bulked up. And I'm like, thanks.
I kind of wish when you used to criticize me for being skinny.
Yeah, I ate enough sausage and gravy biscuits and gravy. By the way, the genius of all geniuses was at the Kolache factory many, many years ago, where they actually put sausage gravy inside a kolache bun and made it a sausage and gravy kolache. It's the greatest thing that maybe has ever been invented, because it's right. It doesn't spill out. You can drive with it. I mean, you can't drive eating biscuits and gravy, but you can drive eating a biscuits and gravy kolache. So
Titus Howard is the guy that, when we talk about guys being bulky, Titus Howard has moved down to guard. I think that's probably, for the most part, you know, Blake Fisher's had some really promising moments. There's other moments where it's like, okay, he's still a young player. He's developing. But for the most part, I think a lot of people are pleased with the potential, perhaps, as Titus Howard as a guard. And I've seen people kind of put up polls online about it, like, should Titus stay at guard? The important thing to point out is that Titus, every step along the way, anytime he's ever been at guard, has been very adamant that, like, at the end of the day, I'll play guard, but I am a tackle, and I'm going to remain a tackle. And I feel like I think he should really take some time to think about this in the offseason, because I do think that he's got the physical potential to be – he could be an elite guard. I don't know if he has the physical potential to be an elite offensive tackle. I think he's got, you know, he can be a very, very solid offensive tackle, but there's some things about him on the inside that I like, but I don't think he's, I think he's just dead set against it.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing you have to, and this is my question that I thought about a lot too. I know a lot of guys, when it comes to position changes, you know, Clowney was kind of like this. You know, because Clowney would get used on the inside, and so he'd get labeled a defensive end, but he really wanted to be an outside linebacker because outside linebackers, quote-unquote, got paid more, especially when it was the franchise tag and all that kind of stuff. So the difference is Titus has already gotten paid. Now, I know that, you know, 3 years can go pretty fast, so you want to get paid again. But if you're really good at something versus being okay with something, you'll get paid more by being really good versus being just okay. But yeah, he's already gotten paid. And I don't know whether he wants to hear this or not, but I know Chris Jones had four quarterback hurries and four quarterback pressures in the game against the Texans. I don't believe, and I think about it, I don't think any one of those came going against Titus Howard.
No, that was...
A couple of them going against Laramie when Jones went to the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you combine, say, take, and I'm just talking Chris Jones in particular. Titus played left guard against him in 2022. He didn't have a stat in that game against Titus. He didn't have a sack, much less he had two tackles. Didn't have a tackle for a loss or anything going against Titus this past time. So maybe the realization at some point is that Titus has to have is maybe I'm a pretty good guard. And I know that's tough. I know it's tough. I know you played nose tackle. That's a thankless position. There are guys that have to go from outside and then have to do what you do. They don't like it. That's not easy for them. They don't, I don't want to go inside. I'll give you the great example of that. Charles Omenihu. Charles did not want to play inside. I have an agent friend of mine who told me the very first time he met Charles Omenihu, it wasn't, hey, how you doing? Hey, I'd like to represent you. Oh, this is cool. Let's talk about what you can do for me, whatever. Charles walked into the meeting and was like, I don't want to play inside. Like, immediately.
Yeah.
So there are guys that do not want to go from defensive end down to nose tackle. You probably know a few. And I know there are some that don't want to go from tackle to guard. But guess what? If you're good at it, at some point, maybe the light goes on and says, maybe I can stay here.
I would say honestly, because like when I was a younger player, my first 5 years, I was playing in a 4-3 defense. I was a 3 technique, and there were times where I played defensive end. Like, and I could have gone either direction. Like, I could have played at 265 if I wanted to or had to. Or I at times in my career, I played at 330. So when I got to Houston, you know, I was kind of an undersized defensive tackle. I got to Houston, and Dom Capers was able to use his actual scheme, because he was my defensive coordinator in Jacksonville for a little bit, but he had to kind of make a hybrid version of his system because of the personnel we had. It used to be a much bigger difference between a 4-3 and a 3-4. I got here, and I started off as a defensive end in this scheme, which is still an interior defensive lineman, but about midway through training camp, they moved me down to nose tackle. And it was like, for me, it was awesome because all of a sudden everything just clicked. And I became a different player than anybody I'd been in my previous 5 years. I was a better football player just simply because of the position change and playing in that scheme.
Yep.
And I gave up like pretty quickly any like wants or needs or anything to ever be a guy that plays on the edge or like a true 3 technique or anything like that, because like, oh man, this is fun. Like, I was capable of being more like a physically dominant player there than I was ever able to as a 3 technique or a defensive end or anything like that. And I think that maybe if Titus could look at it that way, that, all right, man, yeah, it's nice being a tackle, and it's you know, there's a certain amount of respect that goes with that. But what if the ceiling is a lot higher as a guard?
Right.
Because, man, it's fun to be good at something. Now, the downside is any when you play on the interior, it's rough in there, man. And you got to have an attitude for it. Like, you got to – it's a fist fight.
It's hell in there.
It's brutal, man. The action is immediate. There's no room for errors, and there's contact, like hard contact, almost every single play. And I don't know, some guys just naturally don't necessarily have an appetite for that. So I don't know. Maybe if they want him to play guard, maybe they should challenge whether he thinks he's tough enough to do it or not. I don't know. Like, maybe that's the issue. I don't know. I'm not claiming that he's not tough enough.
Yeah,
saying that's the mind game strategy I would use. I would try to gaslight him into wanting to be a guard.
I just feel like with him in there, the protection's been better. Now, we haven't been able to run the ball exceptionally well. And I'm trying to remember what game he took over. Was it Miami that he took over? We should have been able to run the ball a little bit better against Miami, but I understand you got some moving pieces. We got to get back to running the football at some point.
In the Miami game, you could see there was something
there.
Was that the first start? That was the Miami game, right? I believe so, yeah. And his footwork is just, you know, he needed worry, and everything was like he was kind of thinking his way through things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he could end up being. I think he could be a really good guard, and it's a matter of whether he would want it or not. Now, this is the part that rubs me the wrong way, I guess, is all right. Look, if Blake Fisher, you draft Blake Fisher in the second round, and they're going to want to start him at some point. And at some point, Blake Fisher does not have the physique to be a guard, probably
Correct.
Ever. Very Right. few guys with a physique like that. I'm thinking of the guy from Cincinnati was like the last guy I can think of. It was a tall, lanky, really good guard. It's hard to do. But the best thing for the team might be, hey, Titus, you're going to be a guard and Blake Fisher's going to be a tackle. Like that's just where we are. So, yeah, that's what you're going to go do. It's not a matter of like what looks – and not to mention, I showed up in training camp this year and I thought, man, Titus looks like he had fun this summer. That's a heavy dude right there. And especially early in the season, I don't think he was moving much like a tackle. Go down to guard, man. You can eat whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Eat whatever you want. Oh, that's where I get back to the sausage and gravy thing. That's when I really embraced nose tackles. When I realized, like, wait a second, I could be like 20 pounds heavier and be just fine. And I could eat every burrito I see. I could have all the sausage and gravy I want, and it was awesome. We lived where that first year, Brandy and I got a place in the Rice Lofts. I think it was like the second or third year, or whatever it might be. And there's I don't know if it's still there or not, but there used to be a Chipotle in the lobby. And
oh,
it was
no.
When you're a nose tackle, though, and every day
it's
I come
okay.
home from like off season OTAs, and you smell that Chipotle in the lobby, and that's a make a right turn and walk in and get myself a burrito or three for my pre lunch. It was awesome.
There are advantages to being an interior player on either side of the ball.
That Sambuca Jazz Lounge was in the building too. Now I couldn't walk directly into it.
Yeah.
But it was right there. So like I'd have like four burritos for lunch, and then I'd go to that Sambuca Jazz Lounge and get like a cheesy pasta dish of some sort and everything. Oh,
oh
it was
man.
Awesome. So much fun.
So much fun. I know you've said this before about J.J. Watt. He should have just blown up and been a nose tackle going forward.
I wanted one year. I tried to plant that seed in his mind once. Just go in there. Dude, you have no idea how much fun it would be. How strong. Like, just how – if J.J. decided to get up to, like, 335, oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Which he could easily do.
Yeah.
Like, J.J. could put out – he's got the frame for it.
He's from Wisconsin. He's eating – he can eat a lot of cheese. He can handle it. His body's up for it. Speaking of JJ, he was on the Chiefs and Steelers broadcast on Netflix. What were our reviews to the degree that we were able to see much on Netflix? Doing the NFL, after the Paul Tyson debacle, did Netflix get it right? Yeah, we'll talk about that next right here on Payne and Pendergast.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
No Pendergast, but there is a Harris, and there is a Payne, not Payne. Even though Wednesday was not good, there was definitely P-A-I-N that day.
Yeah.
That was rough. But there's P-A-Y-N-E, and that's the most important one because Seth Payne is with me, and I'm John Harris.
My mom's side of the family are the Harrises.
Oh, nice.
So that's I feel like I'm extending my visits with relatives by being with you today.
Well, very nice. So we were talking about what generation we are, and we are Generation X. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, man, does Generation X have an issue with remembering what you teased going into this segment? And then I remembered, I remember what you teased going into this segment. Did you get a chance to watch the Steelers and Chiefs? I know you were doing the pregame show, so I don't know if you had a chance to watch too much.
Only little smidgens of it. Yeah, I just said like I've watched, and I still have. I'm planning on doing that this afternoon to watch the whole game
because I was interested in watching. I watched bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But I thought JJ did a pretty good job as a game analyst.
Oh, good.
I thought he did a pretty good job. He and Nate Burleson. It took a little bit to kind of work together? And I know that from having done it with ND during the preseason. You know, kind of how do you work a three-man booth? I've never been a big fan of three-man booths, and I used to say it all the time. And then all of a sudden, in the summer, I get put in there. But
you guys did a great job. But you guys also, you guys have all done it before.
Right, we know each other.
You already have a natural chemistry.
Right.
You've worked with ND before. It's like, that's where I'm always, I said this yesterday with Sean. I think producers think, oh, well, this is the first time JJ's done it. We'll make it easier by having an extra guy there.
Right.
It actually makes it way harder.
Yes.
Because you don't know when you can talk, when you should lay back. It makes it a lot harder.
That's what I found it out with ND. And I mean, I was going to be deferential to ND, but we got to a point in the booth, especially by the third game, where we could kind of look at each other like, you take this, I'll take this. You know, you got this, I got this. And we got to a really good rhythm throughout. I wish we could have done more. I would like to hear JJ and Nate Burleson do more games. I thought that was a really good broadcast with Ian Eagle and JJ and with Nate Burleson. And I think, and Mark and I talked about this because we had JJ in studio for his Ring of Honor ceremony last year, and we were talking about it. And JJ was, you know, going in with CBS and doing the pregame show and all that. And I thought, he's going to want to be a game analyst at some point.
Yeah.
You have 3.5 hours to stretch your legs a little bit, to talk and get into some things that you're just not going to on a pregame show. Mm-hmm. In the pregame show, you've got 25 seconds, get your soundbite, and out. Yeah. That's it.
A lot of those older coaches, you can tell, they just, a producer hands them some bullet points, and then that's all that you got to talk for 20 seconds at a time, and then there you go. Where, yeah, I think JJ really, I think JJ, because he's wired the way he is, he's kind of been attacking this media thing this year, and he's full bore into it. I think for him, the challenge of really learning the entirety of the game, and there's like kind of like, because I've probably learned more about coverages and certain aspects of the game since I've been retired, than when I was an actual player. Yep. Because I knew what I needed to know as a defensive lineman.
That's
and
right.
I knew, you know, you adjust, you know, you based on coverages and everything, you adjust your style of play. But I think JJ will love that part of it.
Yeah. And he sounded really, really good, which got me thinking about Netflix. And if you have Netflix and you tried to watch the Jake Paul, is it Jake Paul? I think it's Jake Paul. Jake Paul, yeah. Mike Tyson fight, it was maddening. Absolutely just frustrating, streaming issues, the whole thing. Now, I did see a little bit up front about some of the, it doesn't work, it's not working for me, I can't find it. And some other people were griping and complaining about, well, I've got to have now a second screen for basketball over here and then Netflix over here, all that kind
That's
of stuff.
The hardest thing about streaming is not being able to flip channels. Yeah. But yeah.
That's exactly. But I thought overall, I thought the product was really, now, I thought Netflix product, what the Texans put out there the other day, was not so great. But I thought the game production, everything, I liked the score, but I just liked everything about what they did. And then the Beyonce show, I saw probably about 75% of it from down on field level. But then when I watched it back on Netflix, I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. Now, apparently they paid a lot of money for that. A lot. I saw somebody on Twitter, X, whatever you call it, said $60 million she was paid to play that show, which I fell out of my chair. I'm like, that can't be. Not really?
I can't imagine that's the case, but maybe. Well, no, because the NFL, or because Netflix paid $75 million to broadcast the games. But I don't know, maybe.
I don't know. But it was a great show.
That's true. Netflix does throw money around like crazy.
Yes.
So anyway, but it was a, yeah, well, whether you like Beyonce or not, and whether you just hated the show or not, the production value of that of that performance,
it's really good.
For a halftime performance.
That wasn't the Super Bowl.
In a regular season game, especially. I knew as soon as I got into the building, I usually get there about 5 hours before the game. I go up to the press box. I steal some of your by the numbers to use on our show.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I don't like it when you put it up late, by the way. So
I do my best.
But I got up in the press box and I'm looking. I'm like, oh, like hanging from the rafters, there's all this lighting. And I'm like, oh, like this is going to be a different type of production. I've never seen this before.
Yep.
Where you've got stage lighting rigged from the
all
top
all over the stadium.
Halftime,
if you weren't there, it was crazy. They had lights, different kinds of lights all over the 600, 500, 600 level. They were on like the 300 or 400 level where they had put up individual lights. I'd never seen anything like that. Never.
I was, if it had been a close football game, if at any point at the end of the first half I felt like the Texans had a chance of winning that game, I think I actually would have been frustrated by the long halftime. Because especially, let's say you're winning that game, it's kind of almost like it feels like the Super Bowl in New Orleans when the lights went out.
Yes.
Shift momentum.
Yes.
It's like there's something about that where it just feels but because at that point I had checked out emotionally, I was like, oh, okay, let's just enjoy the splendor of this display.
Where'd you watch it from? Were you up in the press box?
I watched it. I didn't watch it, but I had it on in my I drove to the studio at halftime
because
I had to do some work.
Yeah.
So the cool thing was I think I left the building right at the end of the first half. And I got to Greenway Plaza. Well, they might have only been midway through the show at that point.
Oh, wow.
So like, there was no time crunch at all. I was able to. So I had it streaming on my phone just in case. I didn't want to miss any of the halftime show. And, you glance down and you see what's going on. It was impressive. It was impressive.
Yeah, it was. I've never seen anything like that ever. And I'll admit, I don't go to concerts much at all. I don't know if concerts are supposed to look that way or not, but I've seen Super Bowl halftime shows, and I thought that one was right up there with all of them. I mean, all the different elements, bringing in guests.
Yeah.
And I was floored. I mean, I'm watching it from field level. I walked back in, back in the tunnel, and I almost got run over by the TSU band, which is awesome that she just invoked. The one thing I wish she would have done was she kept saying Texas, 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 which I get it. That's her song, Texas Hold'em. But she should have said Houston, at some point. We don't care about the other, that's Texas. This is Houston. She never mentioned Houston. But either way, I thought Netflix did a really strong job with both games, the production. They got good announced crews. I didn't get a chance to hear too much of Noah Eagle and Greg Olson, but I would imagine that was probably a pretty good crew.
That part of it I really liked, just because, and I've watched big chunks of the first half. I went back and watched some good chunks of the TV broadcast. I just like Greg Olson a lot.
Yeah,
I think
do too.
Their actual game day stuff felt just like a normal NFL production, I think, in a lot of ways. It didn't feel like, at least from what I've seen, it didn't look like they were trying a whole lot of gadgetry and everything. Like when Apple TV does baseball, especially when they first started doing it, it just felt like they were trying way too hard to do too many, so many new and innovative things. You're like, all right, come on. At some point, can we just watch baseball? So for me, the doses I've got of it, I felt like they were fine. And part of that's just because I really like Greg Olson. So I'm excited. I was going to watch the All-22 of the Steelers game this afternoon, but I might just go back and watch the broadcast so I can hear JJ.
Yeah, JJ, I thought he was pretty good. So we'll see how he gets used more, hopefully, in the future in these games.
Was JJ, did it strike you as, is he a guy that's, where is he on the scale of, on one end you got John Madden, bing, bang, boom, and then on the other end you've got Mike Mayock, who's like a computer program up there, getting super, super technical. Where
I felt
is he
like,
on that spectrum?
I feel like JJ understood the mission, and that was you infotain.
Yeah.
Our friend Jim Ross, Sean's good friend from WWE fame, I'll never forget JR telling us at some point, he's like, you're in the infotainment business. Uh-huh. And I was like, what the hell you mean by that, JR? And he said, you have to inform, but you have to entertain.
Yeah.
And so I think JJ did a pretty good job of kind of straddling that line of knowing, all right, I'm entertaining, but I've also got to inform. And so he would talk about a few technical issues or technical things, but then he would also make sure that he was joking with Nate Burleson about certain things as well. So the only thing early on, there was a lot of talk about TJ, obviously. Uh-huh. But there was one time where Nate Burleson said something about TJ's game and whether JJ had that. JJ just played along with the joke and, was really funny with it. So he's got that part of it too. I mean, he's always had that.
Well, and that's where, when it comes to the infotainment side of it, I think a lot of people our age that just, watch Madden all the time and everything, the critiques of him while he was still a commentator, because let's be honest, everybody, everybody acts like, oh yeah, everybody loved Madden. No, there were people that didn't like that he kept things very simple. And I think some people didn't realize or understand that he was 10 times smarter than he ever let on during the broadcast, because he knew he was broadcasting to a mass audience.
Right.
And he tried to break it down as simply as possible. And because of that, it's one of those things that, yeah, look, if you want your hardcore analysis, there's websites you can go to for that. But when it comes to entertaining like tens of millions of people, you want to try to kind of simplify and make it entertaining. And really, he taught, like a lot of people will say, like, hey, I kind of learned about that. I didn't know anything about football, but I loved watching John Madden because he explained the simple stuff to me.
Yeah, and he did.
I think I could see JJ knowing kind of how to find that sweet spot.
Yeah, fine. And it's a very fine line. There's no question about that. Now, I know it didn't look like it the other day, but the Texans are going to the playoffs. There's one team in particular it looks like the Texans will be playing. But could it be someone else? Could it be a different squad? Could it be the Baltimore Ravens? Oh, God, no. Well, we'll discuss that next.
NBD.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Although we do wish that Sean were here, I think he's here with us in spirit. It's Sean Harris and Seth Payne coming at you. Seth, I like to mess around with the ESPN playoff machine. I don't know if anybody, I don't know if people out there know this.
Yeah, I think it's pretty pop. Yeah, like it's fun to kind of plug in the different scenarios and figure out what you're operating. Like, it'll tell you, okay, if this team beats that team, the chance of you going there, all that, it's fun.
I love playing around with this. So I started, I waited until week 17 because I was kind of curious. All right, where could the Texans end up playoff-wise? What could it be? After Wednesday's game, we now know exactly what it's going to be. Your Texans are going to play here as the fourth seed. And we know that the number one seed, the Kansas City Chiefs. So we know 1-4 are locked in. I believe we know that Buffalo, Baltimore are in. I think they're, maybe not. I don't know. Either way, the AFC North has not been decided. AFC East, AFC South, AFC West have been decided. Kansas City, the one seed. Buffalo is locked in, I think, as the two seed. Yes, they're locked in as a two. I don't think they can. They could. Maybe. Either way. More than likely, Buffalo's going to be the two. The three seed, right now, it looks like it could be the Baltimore Ravens. All Baltimore has to do is win on Sunday. Doesn't matter what the Steelers do. If they win, doesn't matter what the Steelers do. Baltimore's the three seed. If Pittsburgh wins, Pittsburgh's the five seed. However,
if Pittsburgh wins, regardless of whether Baltimore wins or loses, gotcha.
Right. So, Baltimore wins, it's over. Baltimore wins AFC North.
Okay.
Now, if Baltimore loses, combined with a Steelers win, the AFC North champion will be the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the five seed coming to Houston for wild card weekend will be the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, which a lot of people have pointed out. It just seems way too ironic that last year the Texans got destroyed by the Browns in the regular season at the end of the season, and then they faced the Browns again in the wild card round in the playoffs. The biggest difference there, obviously, you don't need to be a football expert to know, is that Lamar Jackson is playing at a different level than Joe Flacco.
It's harder to, and
CJ didn't play in that first game versus the Browns. Now, there are some similarities in that the defense was banged up in that game versus the Browns. So at least, there were some things where you could draw some similarities, but I think the biggest difference by far is just that Lamar Jackson's playing at an MVP caliber. Joe Flacco is kind of making a nice run of it, but he turned into a pumpkin, obviously.
Yes.
I don't think Lamar Jackson's going to have a Joe Flacco type performance if they're here at NRG.
Now, if you're thinking, okay, well, who do the Ravens play? Well, The Ravens play the aforementioned Cleveland Browns, and the game is in Baltimore. So there's a pretty high likelihood the Browns, at this point, they're playing DTR. They're playing Dorian Thompson-Robinson at quarterback because, well, we know what happened with number four. Jameis Winston is an interception, pick six waiting to happen, so they decided, let's go with DTR. The season's shot. I give the Browns credit. The Browns have played hard. Mm-hmm. They play for Kevin Stefanski. But they going to beat Baltimore, Baltimore having the division on the line. I give them about a 2.6% chance of beating the Ravens. Yeah. So if the Ravens win, it's over. The Ravens then win the division. They're the three seed. And Pittsburgh would come here as the five seed. So we already know, Seth, how we would feel about Baltimore coming here. How do you feel about Pittsburgh coming here for a wild card playoff game?
For the most part, you know, I don't feel good about the Texans' offense against anybody right now, and certainly not one that's an actual good team or a good defense. The big opportunity there is that Russell Wilson has done some impressive things this year. There's been times where he looks like vintage Russell Wilson. He's a different quarterback when he's got George Pickens on the field, especially. Yes. But I think going versus this Texans' defense, I think you might see the best version of the Texans defense, which is turnover hungry and just taking the ball away either with forced fumbles or with interceptions. And I'd feel really good about the chance of winning that game. For all of the issues and everything else, I think the home field advantage matters a lot versus the Pittsburgh Steelers in a way that there's no level of home field advantage, I think, that really helps you out against the Ravens. Now, the only codicil to that is that how big is the home field advantage when you're playing with against the Steelers in a wild card round? Because half that stadium might be Steelers
that's
fans.
True. That is true. We have
we've seen that before. Playoff game. Yeah,
they'll travel for a playoff game. And I get worried, especially after playing the way we did against the Ravens. Last time that we were on a field, that's what the fans, and I've had people tell me, so I pay for this? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I know that's the risk you run when you buy tickets, but it's just tough. So Steelers are going to get their hands on tickets. Now, the Steelers fans might be thinking the same thing. Like, we've lost three in a row. We lost three in 11 days, and they finished with the Cincinnati Bengals I don't know if it's Saturday or Sunday. But they finished with the Bengals. The Bengals very easily could put one on the Steelers in Pittsburgh, just as much as they could put it on in Cincinnati. So, I would, at this point, the combination of potentially facing the Steelers and the Chiefs, all things considered, I kind of think I would be okay with that. Not totally. I mean, I would probably love to play the Broncos or Chargers, a team that hadn't been in the playoffs for a few years. In the Broncos' case, they haven't been in the playoffs since 2015.
Yeah.
Playing a rookie quarterback in Bo Nix. Playing Herbert, who gave up a big lead to the Jaguars last time he played in the playoffs. But you got to play the Steelers, a team that has been dealing with some stuff lately. I don't want to say I mind it or I don't mind it, but it's probably the best thing, I guess, that we could possibly have at this point, Seth.
What are you in terms of the Broncos, like I had to grudgingly acknowledge and compliment Sean Payton for the job he's done with Bo Nix. It drives me slightly crazy, except that you have to acknowledge that it's been a good job. Like, what do you feel about Bo Nix in terms of rookie performances and like how much of it can be built on versus how much of it is okay? They're scheming around him and the legal catch up, etc.
I think Bo's done a really nice job. I got a chance to see Bo up close to the Senior Bowl, and I'm like, he's miserable. Like, he just looked awful. He missed receivers horribly. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I know he's better than this. And I think Sean Payton realized that too and said, hey, we'll make him the 12th pick in the draft. And I do think early on they were massaging the game plan to give him things that he could handle. But I think he's kind of like what you would want a rookie quarterback to do. They kind of massaged it early. They took the training wheels off. He said, you're going to drive into a mailbox or three, but just keep getting up, and eventually you're going to get on the road, and you're going to be fine. And I think he's kind of gotten there. That said, in his first playoff game, I'd take it, but Denver can get to the sixth seed. But the Texans can't get to the 3 seed. And I don't think Denver can get to the 5 seed. I don't think that's possible.
The biggest thing about Bo Nix, when I look at a guy like him, because he does a lot of stuff, or at least, you know, and I haven't watched him that closely in the last 2/3 of the season. You know, he does some things that are just fundamentally off and that you can't get away with over time. Some of the college stuff that's kind of got to get beat out of you over time. Like, Bo Nix has more physical talent and potential than Case Keenum did. But Case, when he came in and he had that little dose of success initially, but it was like, man, Case was so raw. Like, Case had so many air raid type elements that needed to be beat out of him over time. Yeah, yeah. And you just never know. The vast majority of the time, guys don't do it. They can't figure it out.
Exactly.
And like Case, to his credit, I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize how much he had to improve on a lot of things in terms of just really running an NFL offense. The fact that he made it as long as he did, it's a testament to how hard he must have had to work at it. And that's just what you never know with a rookie. It's like, okay, are they going to really learn these lessons and build on it?
Yeah, there is a chance. There is a chance that Denver could be the 5 seed. They'd have to win both games. They play at Cincinnati, and then they get a visit from Kansas City, and Pittsburgh would have to lose in Week 18. So there's a chance, but beating Cincinnati in Cincinnati and then winning at home against the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs could put it on cruise control.
Yeah.
So maybe a chance that Denver could come here as the 5 seed. Maybe. And that would be awesome because then Pittsburgh would have to play Baltimore in the six game. So there's a chance for Denver, but, man, that is a tough. To beat Cincinnati and Kansas City and then hope for Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh could very easily lose that game to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. But if Cincinnati loses to Denver, then Cincinnati's probably out of the playoff mix. Are they going to care? Is Jake Browning going to play against the Steelers and the Steelers get kind of an easy win before they get into the playoffs? I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll definitely see. And one other thing that we're going to see about, and we don't know when, if, how, Deontay Johnson is a Texan. What do we think? What does Seth think about that? I'll get his thoughts next, right here on Payne and Pendergast.